The thrill and excitement of March Mania is here, and DraftKings Sportsbook, one of America's top-rated sportsbook apps, is giving new customers a shot to turn $5 into $150 instantly in bonus bets with any college basketball bet. You can find all the lines and available odds, of course, at the DraftKings Sportsbook app. North Carolina listeners, don't forget, DraftKings Sportsbook is now live in your state. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code SBNFL. New customers can bet $5 to get $150 instantly in bonus bets only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code SBNFL. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly on behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort. 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/bball for eligibility, deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
Welcome to Intercepted. I'm Justice Mosqueda, and I'm joined here by Dylan Bishop. Say what's up, people, Dylan.
What's up, Justice? How's it going?
That's not going, too good. Kenny Clark got put on the COVID reserve today. My running back has an illness. It's not a COVID-related illness, but not the best. It seems like there's a lot of stuff flowing around the world, Dylan. There's like three teams with 15-plus guys out. Case Keenum is now apparently out for the Cleveland Browns. He's supposed to be starting on Saturday. He even practiced today. This is just chaos. There's Saturday NFL games. No one's healthy. What's wrong with the world?
Everything, all at once. It's almost like there's different variants going around that are, kind of getting progressively worse because this virus keeps, circulating around the world. People won't get rid of it.
Yeah. And the NFL, recently, they just today worked a deal with the union where, the protocols are now changed, right? It used to be, if you're unvaccinated, there's still that 10-day, period where you then have to test, negative, and then go through like the off-field workouts. Like they basically check your heart and stuff like that, and then you return to the field. The way that it used to work for the vaccinated players was you had to get two negative tests more than 24 hours apart, be asymptomatic, and then you could return to the field. Now it's like immediate. So if you get a positive test and then, you know, you test 2 hours later and it's negative and you're asymptomatic, you can just return to the field. And I think a lot of that is, I don't know how to say, still pronounce it. Omicron? Is that how you say it?
Omicron, I guess. I don't know. Optimus Prime, Megatron, Oprah, Omarosa. I don't know. I don't know what we got going on.
I'm bad at reading in general. So, and speaking typically, which is why I host this podcast. But yeah, I guess a lot of it has to do with that strain and it being, I guess, more contagious, but also like less serious at the same time. I don't know. I'm not an epidemiologist. All I know is the NFL is kind of changing the rules a little bit, and it's going to get vaccinated players who are infected with the virus returned to the field faster if they test negative. But let's talk about Dylan Bishop. Dylan Bishop is my good buddy. We've been friends for probably like a decade at this point. You're WWE.
At least half one.
You're a wrestling aficionado. You're way more into wrestling, which is surprising because I've actually met like half of the dudes who like work for like WWE. We had the same legal counsel with the XFL and stuff like that. So there was basically crossover. The buildings were across the street from each other in Sanford, Connecticut. But you are also the Madden Pals champion, and I'm giving you some room to just talk crap to me. We're in a Madden league that has, I think it right now, it has like 8 people in it. Typically, like we've had it up to like 20, and somehow I go undefeated against everyone else other than Dylan, who steals my crap and then beats me over the head with it. So here's your moment to shine, Dylan. Give it to me.
Yeah, I mean, listen, styles make fights, and your style just is a worse version of mine, is what all it comes down to. Listen, you're 0-5 against me. You've got zero rings. You just can't beat me. It's not going to happen. Listen, you had like a, 17-18 point lead against me in the last Super Bowl, and then you blew it. You choked. You're Mickey Mouse Skater. You go up against these these Mickey Mouse schedules. You just can't get it done. You know what it is? And it's I draft better players, I develop better players than you, and then I run your stuff better than you do.
You do run my stuff, and sometimes it is better than me. That's the worst part of this league. And this league is now going into like year three, right? You usually play like two franchises each version of Madden. The worst part is my stuff gets assimilated into the rest of the league and then makes you guys better play. I'm like the Chip Kelly of the Madden Pals League.
It's great. Yeah, we got John Shipley has really started improving.
John, who I woke up last night at like 2 o'clock in the morning Eastern time because he covers the Jaguars. And I was like, hey, buddy, it's time to wake up. You got a job to do. Urban Meyer got canned.
Yeah, like John drafted in our fantasy draft Anthony Schwartz with his 98 speed or whatever he has, just out of spite so that you couldn't get him. And now he's one of his best players and on his team, and he's really helping John take a foothold in the AFC. Maybe he'll knock you off in the playoffs.
This is how nerdy this Madden Pals League is. Before we move on and get to the Ravens Packers game that we want to get to, there are multiple people now in this league who during the fantasy draft use an outside client to basically build it and draft off of it. And it's starting to be like people drafting players, like you said, like John drafting players just because he knows I want fast receivers. It's been like fast receivers, fast corners. So now I have to build my team a different way. I get a 17-point lead, still can't close it with a running team. It's bad. It's terrible. I hate it. It's the bane of my existence, and I'll never quit it because I need that win. And I'm still chasing that dragon. Let's talk about Lamar Jackson, your quarterback. He's got an ankle injury. He hasn't practiced in 2 days. On Monday, Harbaugh came in hot, basically saying, you know, we expect Lamar to start. That dropped the line. The opening line opened up at -7. Green Bay as 7-point road favorites. That hasn't happened since – or a line hasn't been that big on the Ravens being home underdogs since Ryan Mallett started a game for you guys, if you can remember.
Oh, God.
That, all those years ago. After Harbaugh's comments, the line dropped from 7 to 5.5. It might be around 5 now. It's moving around that range. It doesn't seem like Lamar is going to play. How nervous are you if Lamar can't play?
Oh, buddy, I'm nervous if he does play. I mean, just because of, you know, the injury, a sprained ankle isn't exactly something that is going to be a quick heal. It's not exactly, I wouldn't expect him to be 100% if he were out there, even though it's not a high ankle sprain. Without Lamar, I mean, Tyler Huntley has come in relief and done a serviceable job. But frankly put, even with Lamar, I'm not expecting the Ravens come out with a win here. I'm just looking for them to not get embarrassed.
The other thing, too, is Lamar's looking for a contract. So I don't know how hard he's going to be pushing through these injuries. Plus, man, he's gotten COVID twice, too. Like he has been real unlucky this year for as sturdy as
Lamar. And he had a stomach flu. Flu like a week. That's why he didn't play against the Bears. I think he's
his
just
immune
has the,
system's
the,
kicking
the
his
world's,
ass.
Yeah, the world's worst immune system, really. I mean, and he goes in on the natural immunity part of it, which draw your own conclusions from that, I guess. But just Tyler Huntley is probably going to play this game, and against a defense like the Packers, I'm not seeing it turn out too well. Like, he's done a serviceable job so far, but it's been a lot of like simple concepts here. And against the Browns, it was a lot of prevent defense, especially at the, like towards the end of that game. Like, there was a 4th and 11 where it was just a total blown coverage. No one covered Mark Andrews, that probably should have put the game away while they were still down by multiple scores, but they just completely blew the coverage on Cleveland's part and let them continue that drive and get down and make it a one possession game.
I have two stories for you with the Ravens quarterback room. We could go into three, actually. One, Tyler Huntley. You're going to enjoy this because you're a wrestling guy. I think I've told you this story before. Tyler Huntley was not invited to the combine, right? This was when I was working with the XFL. We had heard, you know, Boss Man comes down and Vince McMahon says, hey, how can we get on the ticker during the NFL combine. So me and Eric Galco come up with this scheme, and we're like, we should sign the best quarterback who isn't invited to the combine to an XFL contract. Ends up being Tyler Huntley. We end up going back and forth for a while. Bossman says he wants something on the ticker. This would get us on the ticker. And then, you know, stuff doesn't end up breaking right. We realize it's kind of too late into the cycle, too late into the season. It's hard to get a quarterback kind of like a midseason starting job. And then the pandemic hits, obviously. But Tyler Huntley was like this close to being an XFL quarterback. I've really believed like what he was doing at Utah. He was really efficient. I don't know why he didn't really get a look by the NFL, because it's not like he was like super small or anything. He was an accurate quarterback. I just don't know how good those West Coast scouts are. Because if you watch Huntley, he's not a starting caliber NFL quarterback right now, but he's 2 years removed from being an undrafted free agent. He very much looks like he's one of the top 64 quarterbacks in the league, though, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Like, he's coming, and he kind of – it's probably a little lazy and reductive to call him like a diet Lamar, but considering that's who he's backing up. But, I mean, he does come in and do – he's able to do a lot of the same things. He's basically, you know, has similar athleticism. He doesn't have the, like, same change of direction quickness laterally as Lamar, but he's got that, like, top-end speed for a quarterback, and he's been able to hit these, like, you know, short area passes so far. A lot of times that's what Greg Roman's gone to when he's come in, like, nothing too deep down the field. He's been able to do his part. Like, I think at one point, against Cleveland, he was like 13 of 17 with, you know, in the mid 100s for yards. But he's been quite serviceable. Like, he is a guy that I'm very confident in, like, having him as the backup. Like, he can do what you need him to do when Lamar is out specifically. Like, you don't have to change the offense up much for Tyler Huntley.
This is great, because it goes into my next story. It's very hard to simulate what Lamar Jackson is in practice, right? You've seen it. Cam Newton was the interesting one. I believe there was a time when the Packers were going to play against Cam Newton, and their scout team quarterback for that week was Julius Peppers, right? Because it's hard to simulate someone like that. Lamar is kind of like that in a different way. Not in terms of, like, I guess, like, the physical size, but like in terms of his quickness. I mean, Adrian Amos said that he's the fastest player he's ever seen in the open field, you know, not just quarterbacks, period, at the NFL level. You know what I mean? So it's hard to simulate that, especially for someone who has to pass the ball. When we were with the XFL, it was before the season. So we had already signed the quarterbacks. We had signed PJ Walker to the Houston Roughnecks. He was going to be their starting quarterback, and the Pittsburgh Steelers were going to play the Baltimore Ravens, and they wanted to sign him for 1 week on the practice squad so that he could simulate Lamar Jackson. And you know, we didn't allow it because it would break his contract. But yeah, it's just weird. Like, I don't know who's going to be running scout team Lamar Jackson in practice for Green Bay, because Jordan Love's athletic, but he's not like that. You know what I mean? And I don't know. It's just kind of a mess. You would think that, like, I don't know, Amari Rodgers, like, what else is he doing when, you know, they're on offense? So get him in there, I guess. It's just weird to see, like, really dynamic players who are really just, like, hard to game plan and, like, rep at the practice level because of the NFL's such constricted rosters. They're so much smaller than, you know, college football, where in the NFL you have, what is it, like 21 players that you can play on game day on the offensive side of the ball. Cliff Kingsbury had 18 receivers when he was at Texas Tech. You know, it's just such a different numbers game. The last story I have, I know someone who was in the Ravens front office. This was after Lamar's first year. He swears to God, half of the front office wanted to sign Eli Manning. If Lamar's second year did not go well, that was kind of like their internal plan, I guess. And then Lamar won an MVP. So how weird is it to see, like, a team that obviously takes credit for, like, you know, analytics and all this stuff? And I'm not saying that they shouldn't or anything, but what is it, like, the victors like have many parents, like losers are a bastard son or something like that. I can't remember how the phrasing goes, but like everyone is taking credit on Lamar Jackson right now. And I know for a fact, half of that front office was not a believer.
No, I think that was the same period of time where I think like guys like Chris Mortensen started reporting kind of similar things. I don't know if Eli Manning's name ever got brought up, but kind of, you know, front office, you know, people around the league being skeptical of the, you know, the long-term plans for the Ravens and Lamar. And definitely you have a lot of people trying to take credit. A lot of people love to give credit to Greg Roman for what he's done with Lamar. But then you have, you know, the other side of the coin is, which I am more of the mind of, which is someone like Steven Ruiz just today writing his piece in The Ringer about how Greg Roman's offense is actually limiting Lamar by his personnel choices, just stacking the boxes up and not giving him any options in terms of pass concepts. So, I mean, the only person we can really give credit to for creating Lamar Jackson is Lamar Jackson and his parents for creating him, literally.
It's so weird. How frustrating is this offense? Because you watch Greg Roman weekly, I'd go nuts. They're in the pistol entirely too much for my liking. They're the only team that runs, you know, a 300-pound fullback consistently. And I understand Ricard, like, does some nice things, but living like that and being in the pistol where your running back, your tailback is basically useless, right, in the passing game, in the pistol. And you have a 300-pound running back. Plus, you have a tight end on the field. And now you have, like, two, maybe three legitimate pass catchers out there consistently. I understand that they're trying to use Lamar kind of like – Kaepernick was used a little bit, I guess is the way to say it. But yeah, there have been a lot of evolutions in the option game since then. Like Kyler Murray isn't getting used like Lamar Jackson is right now. Is that frustrating as someone who's like, you know, is invested in Lamar Jackson's, you know, NFL career?
It's incredibly frustrating. It's you bring up Kyler Murray. I think there was a point where I was before he was hired by the Cardinals, where I thought Cliff Kingsbury would be a great idea to bring in as offensive coordinator of the Ravens. I think this was around the time he was leaving Texas Tech and getting hired as at USC before he left there. But I mean, it's so they pack the box. They love to use Ricard, like you say, like they barely use their running backs out of the passing game, like you said. And they're, again, it's not just even like keeping Mark Andrews on the field. It's like, oh, well, yeah, they have a tight end. It's Mark Andrews. He's one of the best in the league. No, you get a lot of Nick Boyle out there blocking. You get, yep, this year, you're getting a lot of Eric Tomlinson and guys like this, Josh Oliver. And it's guys that they're in there as extra blockers that Greg Roman's really focused on getting this running attack, which it's not working the same way without Marshall Yanda, without Ronnie Stanley, without Orlando Brown. And without Nick Boyle's been injured a lot of the year. And then you go into you're without Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. It's funny, actually, last year when Nick Boyle got injured, they didn't have these extra tight ends that they had all throughout, you know, the preseason training camp, like Oliver and Tomlinson. And they went and they shifted to a more spread out, you know, kind of spread run attack. Getting J.K. Dobbins out, you know, kind of more horizontally, and he was able to use his speed and quickness and get out. And the running game and the team as a whole on offense started to really thrive through that period towards the back half of last year going into the playoffs. And he's just completely gone away from it now. And, you know, there's been, you know, they don't have Dobbins to run that offense with. And it's to say it's not the same with Devontae Freeman or Latavius Murray or Le'Veon Bell when they had him, but still they've kind of, Greg Roman's reverted to what he knows is stacking, you know, playing in a phone booth with all these extra blockers, make sure that the running game can get going. He really loves to establish it, but then it really hurts your passing attack with all these really simple reductive concepts that don't make sense. The routes don't seem to line up. A lot of times guys just seem like they are, you know, out there just kind of, they're like, go out there and find some space out there. Like Hollywood Brown or Sammy Watkins, just like find an opening. Your route is go get open. You're like 10 yards down the field, 5 yards down the field. And there's just the passing offense at its core is rotten.
The other thing too, is it's not like they're not investing in wide receivers. Green Bay Packers fans, you know, close your ears real quick, cover your ears. So we're going to talk about wide receiver investments, but 2019, they drafted Marquise Brown, Hollywood Brown in the first round. They drafted Miles Boykins in the third. 2020, they drafted Devin Duvernay in the third. 2021, Rashad Bateman in the first, Tylan Wallace in the fourth. And then they signed Sammy Watkins as a free agent too. So it's, you have like six wide receivers on the roster who in theory are being paid to produce. And only two of them are getting on the field at a time.
It's not like these guys have, these investments haven't worked out the way they wanted to. Like Hollywood Brown has his drops still, but you know, he's had his struggles over the last couple of years, but this year Hollywood Brown has been good. He has found his speed again. He's been making plays after the catch. Rashad Bateman already looks like he's living up to expectations. He is really good. Like, especially last week, a couple of the catches he was making. And Devin Duvernay, I think they should even be using him more than they do also. Like, on, you know, jet sweep, stuff like this, just getting the ball in his hands. He is an electric playmaker with his speed. And it's, and, you know, Sammy Watkins is maybe the only one that's been disappointing, partially because of injuries. But, and, you know, Miles Boykin hasn't quite worked out either. But they have plenty of options. They're just not using them on the field.
Let's talk about this offense just in general. So Nick Boyle did not practice today, was limited yesterday. We're recording this on a Thursday. He has a knee injury. Hollywood Brown has an illness, did not practice today, but practiced the day before. Lamar Jackson has not practiced with that ankle injury. Patrick McCurry, who I believe is coming off of the bench, is that correct? Has a hand injury and he's limited. Tyree Phillips, their swing guard tackle, has an illness, has not been practicing. Ben Powers, their third round pick offensive lineman, has a foot injury, has not been practicing. Patrick Ricard has a back and knee, did not practice the last 2 days. Alejandro Villanueva, who was forced into the starting lineup when Ronnie Stanley went down, has a knee injury, is not practicing.
So he went from right tackle to left tackle when Stanley got hurt, and McCurry came in at right tackle.
At least McCurry isn't snapping anymore, is my only thought. Those rocket ball, I have never seen a worse center depth chart than last year's Ravens, where they had two guys at center who could not snap. That was amazing.
That was rough.
There was a time, what was it? It was the second Pouncey. I can't remember which Pouncey it was. There was one Pouncey. He was at center for Florida. He got drafted, went to the league, and then the other Pouncey moved to center the next year. That's the only other time at the University of Florida. And he was just, you know, rocket snapping the entire year. That's the only time I've seen any center long-term situation like be that bad, as bad as the Ravens. So this offense is banged up. Like, is there any hope? Is there any hope? Is this line too low? So I say seven points is what it'll probably creep back up to if Lamar for sure is out. If Lamar is like a game time decision, it'll probably still hang around like five and a half until game time. Would you take the Packers in that situation then, based off of how we're talking about this offense?
Yeah, man. Like a one touchdown loss with Tyler Huntley, especially, would be very promising in my mind. Like very optimistic, because like you mentioned, it's not just Greg Roman's like passing offense. And, you know, even if you have your backup quarterback in there, even with Lamar, it'll be rough. It's this offensive line is absolutely nothing compared to what it was 2 years ago. Like we mentioned, Ronnie Stanley went out. Alejandro Villanueva had to go from right tackle to left tackle, and they had to bring in Patrick McCurry, who was a center. They moved him out to right tackle. He was a tackle in college, though. He played left tackle. Then McCurry has gone down with an injury. So now they're playing Tyree Phillips, who was the right guard last year as a rookie. Now he's moved out.
Who knows how's an illness?
Yes. So he went from playing right guard next to Orlando Brown to now being the third string right tackle. at Ben Powers at left guard, who they've kind of tried to get Ben Cleveland, the rookie, in a little bit. Ben Powers has not been good. Villanueva has not been good. Kevin Zeitler and Bradley Bozeman at right guard and center at least have been playing well. McCary, when he's been in at right tackle, has been playing well. But when you've got Phillips out there, Villanueva, Powers, especially if they're banged up, you know, Bozeman's been banged up a little bit. So, I mean, that's another part of the reason that Roman keeps, you know, only giving Rashad Bateman 40% of the snaps in a game like he did against Pittsburgh, is because the offensive line is in the condition that it is, that he feels the need to bring in, you know, guys as extra blockers.
And this is going to be an interesting test to see how Green Bay handles the option defensively, no matter who starts at quarterback, because they just basically the way that they line up, they don't allow explosives. So unless the Ravens go like spread real early, like the Arizona Cardinals did against the Packers, where the Packers were basically in the three safety dime look the entire game, I would expect Green Bay to kind of match wide receivers with cornerbacks, just keep loading the box, play out of too high, have the safeties fit the alleys. They have Amos and Savage, who can both come downhill and play that kind of style of football. They've done a pretty good job this year about limiting explosives. Like, this isn't close to the Mike Pettine style defense. So it'll be interesting to see just, you know, are you squeezing blood out of a rock at that point? Like blood out of a stone? Cause there's not really that much to get out of the Packers run defense. I mean, the whole way that they're structured is, you're not going to get explosive runs on us. We're going to force things to the edge. We're going to stack bodies in the inside of the field. So our safeties come down and nail down, and we have Devondre Campbell playing sideline to sideline. And those are kind of like the guys who rack up tackles. So you can get like 3 yards on this defense consistently, but what you can't do is pop a 15 yarder off whenever you want, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of the strategy the teams have been using against the Ravens in general. Like, that's what DMPs basically went to in the playoff game that went so poorly for them 2 years ago after that MVP season. They're bringing safeties down to the box, running a lot of that cover two invert. And I mean, with Tyler Huntley, not only just, you know, are you going to have less explosive runs probably, but you're also not going to get as much in the pass game either, because, you know, Tyler Huntley's a lot of the plays that Roman's been running with him in hasn't been too much down the field. So it's been occasionally, you know, he had a couple of deep balls that were made. Rashad Bateman made great catches on last week, but most of it has been the short game. So it hasn't, I don't expect a lot of explosiveness in general from the Ravens, if Huntley's in the game, especially.
It sounds like, I mean, the Ravens might run the ball, but like not even to move the field, just like, hey, let Aaron Rodgers have fewer possessions. How about we don't have to score 40 points to tie this ball game or something?
Oh, like yeah. That. Yeah, for sure.
Let's take a break real quick, and then we'll talk about the defense.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And we're back. So relatively, the defense is kind of healthier, at least on like the injury report, than the offense. Calais Campbell's the big one. He didn't practice the first 2 days of this week with a thigh injury. What I will say, Chuck Clark just went on the COVID reserve. He's their starting safety. He was the last preferred starter left in the Ravens secondary. So the Packers are essentially playing a completely backup secondary. This is also not looking good for the Baltimore Ravens, Dylan.
Not great, Bob. I mean, it's Anthony Averett is your number one corner now. Chris Westry is your number two outside. You still have Tavon Young as your nickel corner, who has been the starter at that spot the whole year. But, I mean, again, Deshaun Elliott, he's done for the year. Chuck Clark is on the COVID list. Marlon Humphrey just tore his pectoral muscle last week. Marcus Peters tore his ACL before the season. It's rough out there, and I'm not looking forward to the Anthony Averett, Davante Adams matchup this week. Because, listen, there's been talk of, like, a lot of people have been giving Anthony Averett credit for how he's played this year, and I haven't really seen it, honestly. Like, he gets targeted a lot, and, you know, he's been graded highly in, like, his red zone defenses by, like, PFF, and, you know, of all the issues I have with PFF, this is one of them, I'd say, but I haven't seen it with Averett, and I think Davante Adams is going to expose that on Sunday.
Averett's definitely an NFL player. He's going to bounce around in the league for a long time, but I wouldn't say he's a below average starter, in my opinion. Chris Westry too, missed Wednesday's practice with a knee injury and was limited on Thursday. So he's probably not even going to be full strength. They're going to get eaten, Dylan. They're going to get eaten by Devontae. Devontae is going to see them and see lunch. One thing Mercedes Lewis said today, he said, it's a two chin strap game. You know, the assumption being, you know, the Ravens, they've always been this hard nosed defense. They're going to hit you. They're going to make it tough on you. But at some point, I just wonder if they have the horses, you know, like when Tua comes in and Tua off the bench injured on a Thursday night game can come in and just rip you guys down the field. And Tua's not that type of a quarterback. And now you're going against Aaron Rodgers with Davante Adams, with the speed of MVS, with the strength of Alan Lazard. That's a tough matchup to me. I think that's where the game is won, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's definitely like you're going to be able to get some pressure with, especially if Wink Martindale wants to dial up some more blitzes. He's been kind of dialing that back this year, but with all the injuries, especially now with Marlon Humphrey gone for the year, I would assume that they'll try to dial up some more blitzes here and there to try to give the secondary less time that they have to cover. Against a team like the Packers, I'm not sure how that's going to work out. But in general, yeah, it's going to be a big day for anyone who has Davante Adams on their fantasy team.
Should be noted, Aaron Jones missed practice on Thursday due to an illness. I know we brought that up in the beginning of the podcast, but worth noting again as we talk about the offensive versus Ravens defense matchup. Dominic Dafty has not practiced, though it was reported on Wednesday that he was practicing like in the media open session, which seems a little weird. Rodgers hasn't practiced. Equanimeous St. Brown, the wide receiver, is going to be he's in concussion protocol. He's still not practicing. And then Billy Turner seems like he's working out a little, but he's not practicing. That's the Packers right tackle. So like Dennis Kelly came in last week for Billy Turner. He got reps at right tackle. It seems like their backup situation this week is going to be Ben Braden for all those following at home. Wish Josh Nyman at left tackle, and this Bakhtiari, for whatever reason, can get real ramped up real quick in the next couple of days. I think their offense is fine despite, you know, the injuries. I think this is one where if the Ravens want to run the ball and make it a short game, how about let's make it a short game and let's get out of this game quick. I think that's the one saving grace for the Ravens kind of covering this week.
Yeah, I mean, the Ravens run defense has been playing pretty well this year, especially lately. Like Patrick Queen was off to a pretty rough start to start the year, but after like about the first quarter of the season, he's been able to pick it up. When they brought back Josh Bynes, he really seemed to kind of stabilize the linebacking core. And really, from there, they've been playing the run pretty well. And you know, once they've gotten, you know, healthy, they've been relatively healthy up front with Campbell and Brandon Williams and Justin Matabuike, who's been having a pretty good year, I believe his second year. And I mean, Adafe Owe and Justin Houston can play the run relatively well. Owe, of course, is like just this freakish athlete that can cover so much ground that he really helps things out in the run game.
Do you think it's okay? So I think this is funny. So Owe was a guy, I did the front seven write-ups for Bleacher Report during draft season. So I watched all those guys. I think I watched all but like five guys who were drafted for like defensive front seven. So that's like linebackers, defensive ends, defensive tackles. Owe was a guy I was a little lower on just because he wasn't developed, period. Like I understand why you would take him in the first round. I personally probably wouldn't have done it. At least not without like getting to know the guy. I think a lot with the developmental guys, like how they're wired, I think decides a lot of that. So it's kind of tough to kind of evaluate those guys from afar. Owe had two co-defensive coordinators in college. Neither of them developed him. Neither of them had Micah Parsons playing the right position. And they have since both gotten head coaching jobs at the college football level. That seems weird, right? Like there's bad process there somewhere.
I mean, this is a story of football coaches in general is failing upwards. So not surprising.
Yeah, it just doesn't make sense to me. So outside of Owe, you know, he's just a freak athlete. Like if you hold on to the ball long enough, he's going to come zooming around the corner at some point and just clock you. Obviously, Brandon Williams has been a great nose tackle for years. Calais Campbell, I mean, if Calais isn't a Pro Bowl, or if he isn't a Hall of Famer, he's pretty damn close, especially in this era where we're seeing, you know, interior defensive linemen, like outside of like Donald and like Kenny Clark and I guess like Grady Jarrett, like there's just not that many penetrating defensive tackles who are like putting up big stats. Who else is getting after the passer? Is like, do the edges really have that much in them? Like how much juice does Justin Houston still have in the tank?
Justin Houston has been pretty good this year, actually. Like I kind of didn't expect him to be too much, but he's been their best pass rusher. He's been, I would call him like an above average guy. He's still able to do it pretty well. Him and Owe is a big, you know, effort motor guy, uses that athleticism. Like you said, if you hold on to the ball long enough, he can end up getting back to your back there to you. Tyus Bowser has also been pretty good for them. He also plays really well in coverage. Like I think,
yeah, that's always been the thing with him. That he was so weird at Houston because they were kind of in the, I think, was it? I can't remember who the defensive coordinator was, but it was one of the guys who started the tight front, which is basically like, we're just going to have a 4-man box. And like our 3-4 outside linebackers are also going to play the slot. So like Tyus Bowser really didn't get that many opportunities to rush the passer at Houston in the AAC. He was playing in the slot all the time. He was kind of like, if you liked Deion Jordan when he was coming out at Oregon, this was your second shot at getting Deion Jordan, but like at a much cheaper price, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and they signed Bowser to, I think this past offseason, to a 3 or 4 year contract at only like maybe $5 million a year. He's that's a really good bargain for them because he's not a guy who's going to play every down and be this great pass rusher, but the way he plays in coverage and he can rush the passer well enough to where, I mean, he's well worth putting out there on the field. So he's been a great investment for them.
All right, let's get your game prediction. I guess we already touched on it. You're taking the Packers here on the point spread. Right now it's at 5.
Yeah, minus 5, definitely. I have to think that the Packers can cover that with or without Lamar, if I had to honestly say.
I agree. The one big thing about the bets now is like you almost have to like place them at game time because of all the COVID, man. I mean, there's three teams that have 15 guys out and guys are dropping like flies every day. I mean,
yeah. And honestly, I'm surprised that the Ravens haven't had more so far. It's just Chuck Clark today. I mean, more might be coming. I think there was another practice squad guy or something that ended up on the list like a day or two ago, but considering that they're coming off of playing the Browns, who apparently just spent the last week all spitting in each other's mouths, it seems like that I mean, I'm surprised it's only Chuck Clark so far, really. And we'll see what happens for the rest of the week.
Go ahead and plug all your stuff. Plug Highly Disputed.
Yeah, so you can follow me on Twitter at @VillainBishop. You can follow my podcast that I do at my college campus radio station, Highly Disputed. You can follow that at @DisputedHighly. If you're interested in our takes on the NFL, college football, NBA, and then we heavily focus also on our local school, who is going to have the D2 Player of the Year this year, Tyson Bagent, perhaps a future XFL player in the Rocks XFL, if nothing more at least.
Well, you can spell something cooking.
Yes, hey,
you also got to cover. What was it? Back-to-back Hail Mary wins in a playoff game for Shepherd?
Oh,
man.
That
got put on that was on like SportsCenter and all sorts of stuff.
Oh yeah, that was it. Made the second one made the number two play on SportsCenter. I know Bill Connolly's been shouting that out when it's been happening. Yeah, there was the regional finals, which would be the quarterfinals in the NCAA tournament, and the round of 16 before that had a touchdown of about 25 yards with 1 second left on the clock, and then they followed that up with a legit Hail Mary of about 40 yards to end the game, both after giving up touchdowns with less than 45 seconds left. So, I mean, the dude's a stud. Tyson Bagent from Martinsburg High School in West Virginia, that's won at least 8 of the last 10 state championships here. So, I mean, the dude's a stud. He's got another year left in him, too. He can win back-to-back. Small school player of the year, man.
D2 Dynasty. Thanks for the time, Dylan.
Thank you, Justice.